For the last month or so, with some drafts through cabinet as well, some very heavy discussion as far as how to proceed with this. But we wanted to start out as far as looking at what are the district's budget priorities. And again, cabinet has been discussing these as well. And some of the main things that we're looking at, and you're going to see a big number later on in the presentation, is this $1.9 million to be able to balance the budget, to be able to maintain where we're at right now.
Are those cuts?
That's where we could possibly cut.
To balance
the budget. Balance the budget.
$1.9
million. Right.
Okay.
I'm sorry,
I'll just please notice that these handouts are different than what you might be
yes.
looking at, and this is what you're looking at.
Oh,
so
yes.
These
new handouts.
Yeah. These handouts, we finalized just recently as well with cabinet.
So what you're presenting right now doesn't match what they have?
No, these handouts are what are
online. Yes. Not match.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's online?
What I have does not match. Yeah.
So it's just, yeah.
So the other things that we were looking at, that cabinet's been looking at, is the possible salary increases. Again, they don't want to go on another year without any salary increases, but that would be about $2 million at a 2 to 3% increase. Projected increases in healthcare costs up to $1.5 million.
I have a question on that. Last year, we had this prolonged discussion on increased healthcare, having to change plans. We've never come back to them. We've never circled back to them.
And as a matter of fact, I was in attendance in a health meeting last mm-hmm. week with Mr. McGraw. They did discuss that as well. Also looking at making some cuts to the plan, mm-hmm. some changes in the plan to be able to...
When do we see that?
I understand they're coming back next month.
Mm-hmm. Next month? So mm-hmm. we'll know how much we spent and what are the suggestions and where it's projected. Okay. Thank you. Well, it's not that I won't like it. It's just we need to know.
Yeah. Yes. No, but we just had the
Martha, meeting. I don't know if you want to chime in on the health.
I thought she was sick. I got sick.
She is sick.
Oh, then go sit. Don't sit by me.
We're discussing, I think Randy McGraw was going to come back this coming month for a presentation.
My question was, last year we had this prolonged discussion that we're going to have to change insurance plans. And we were supposed to circle back and make sure that these plans were not just equitable, but that we still made it available. It looked like we were targeting the ones that really needed insurance. And I'm sure you remember that discussion.
Yes,
we
yes.
had that meeting with Randy and the whole nine. But we've never gotten results or suggestions or projections until now. We're seeing an increase in healthcare of $1.5 million. But what does that mean? I mean,
well, on Monday,
at its current state?
And on Monday, there will be a full-blown presentation.
Okay.
I've been giving you monthly updates mm-hmm. on the fund balance for okay. our health. And so you've been getting, well, they come from finance, and I've just shared them with you and as a reminder mm-hmm. that, you know, the fund balance, because remember we have two opportunities to make changes or increase our contribution. Mm-hmm. This time coming up, right now during the budget season, mm-hmm. it is the opportunity to make any adjustments to the district's contribution.
Correct.
Okay, so that is the recommendations that you will hear on Monday as far as the district's contribution needing to go up.
Is that the $1.5 million that we're seeing on here?
That will be for okay. the district's contribution, yes. And actually, it is at 1.5. I know that when we were putting together the budget priorities, that was an estimation. I believe the committee has requested, and they will go through all the numbers with you, and it might be a slight increase over the 1.5.
Oh, I know that's a broad swath.
I think it was 1.6.
1.6?
Yeah.
Okay,
thank you.
So on Monday.
Monday?
Yeah.
Maybe we can see some
yes.
suggestions.
Yes.
Thank you.
So in addition to that, we have some general maintenance and operations. You may have heard Mr. Padilla before, where there have been some emergencies that we've had to address in addition to some regular maintenance that needs to occur. So that has been estimated at about $1 million. In addition, at least two buses at $250,000 and some still including the PES, if needed, at $315,000. That's $7 million. That is a big number. In addition to that, we're recommending, currently we have some textbook funding that can either be rolled over as unassigned to be able to help with purchasing textbooks 2 years from now, or it can go back into fund balance, unassigned fund balance. And as we lead into fund balance, right now, for the current fiscal year, 2016 fiscal year, we're estimating some savings, but in addition to that, we're estimating that we're going to use at least the $1.6 million that we used to balance the budget for this year. So that would be decreasing the unassigned fund balance. In addition to that, there would be a decrease for next fiscal year of $1.9 million, which is what we need to be able to balance the budget. So that would leave the balance at 2017 at $8.3 million, and this would be depleted in about 4 fiscal years after that, which is at 2021 at the current trends. So how do we allocate the resources to the district needs? We first, of course, look at the salaries and the stipends and other requirements needed to be able to fund at current levels with additional pads and so forth. We're at 44 million. And granted, this is just the general operating fund. You'll see the food service fund in a separate slide, some separate information. Then we have to allocate to program requirements. That is state comp ed, gifted and talented, bilingual education, special education, and CATE. We have some spending requirements, and then we have to allocate operating budget for those to be able to meet those spending requirements. We look at what's left, and then we allocate based to campus allocations at $3.2 million, and that's just for the operating, excluding any regular salaried employees. Then we have department allocations. Out of that $6.1 million, we have about $1.6 million in utility costs. And of course, that leaves about $4.5 million for everything else. Yes, ma'am.
Does utility costs include any increase this year significant?
For this year, we had some savings last year.
For next year, you know, for this budget.
We're going to have to look at that because we are seeing that the Reyes building is a little bit pricier than
we expected. Quite a bit pricier.
Yeah.
And you know, which was not what it was represented as. I know your finance, not facilities, mm-hmm. but we were told with LEED, everything's going to be better. Mm-hmm. And it's not. It's significantly higher.
Yes.
So for future.
And then again, with the possible increases from the utility based on the rate 41. So that brings us to a total projected expenditures of about $55.4 million. And in here, this is how we allocate the per capita allocations. We allocate based on enrollment. We allocate about $90 per student at the elementary level, $100 at the middle school, $115 at the high school for instructional purposes. Then counseling, $6 across. Nurses, $3 across. Administration at $23 across, and so the difference is based on the instructional. And this is just the regular basic education. In addition to that, we have our state comp education funding, which is to help benefit the at-risk students, and it's $256 across, and that is based on their at-risk student population. Then we allocate to the high school at $84 to both high schools. In addition to that, this year we've had to fund some other priorities for both the high school and the early college, such as for dual credit textbooks for the Princeton Review and for laptops for the freshmen at the early college. So we basically did the math and backed into it, and the allocations are 251 to the high school and 1,003 for the Northwest. That's what the allocations would be based on their student enrollment. So what factors are impacting the fiscal budget? So two of our main sources, of course, are enrollment, or more so the daily attendance, and of course, property taxes. And in here we have, we're projecting a very conservative 2% increase over this year's certified values. This year we did experience about 6.5% increase. But then again, as we look at, so we're trying to project very conservatively at 1.8. And then we have our enrollment data. You've heard that we're right now we're flat, so we're not getting any new students currently. So this enrollment projection is based on current year numbers at the PIMS enrollment, which is 6,007. And really at our ADA at 93% at 5586. This next slide is just information related to our admin cost ratio. And so with the increase in some instructional staff this year, that kind of helped drive the admin ratio a little bit lower. We're projected to be at 12.6 versus 13.5 last year. But as you can see, the target in the blue has changed over the years. Right now it's at 10% versus 12.5% some years back. This next slide, we included information related as far as students to staff ratio and a student to teacher ratio. And the blue shows teacher. And the acceptable range for that, according to first ratings, is 13 to 22. So this information is based as of a snapshot date, and we're definitely looking at the data to make sure, regarding the PIMS information, to make sure that it is accurate. And then the red, or the burnt orange, is the teachers. Basically, teachers. This represents that teachers are basically at their capacity according to the first ratings, acceptable range of 13 to 22. This next slide is based on information on student capacity, and I believe you'll hear some more information on that with the facilities master plan. Basically, based on our current enrollment, what is our building capacity in each of those buildings?
And they have the most updated information as well.
So what is the district's budgetary outlook for next fiscal year? So for 2017, our estimated total revenue is 58.8. Net of that is the food service revenue. We're projecting at a flat 5.3, and we're still pending some information to be able to get better estimates from the food service. So that would leave us local net of food service at 53.5 estimated revenue, and that's about $500,000 decrease over this current year levels. That's mainly because in the local property taxes, we are expecting an increase, a 2% increase. However, as our property taxes start to increase, we get less state aid. And compounded with that, this year we're expected to be made whole based on the whole harmless provision. So we're not gonna have that effect next year. And so that leaves a negative $871,000 in state aid. So that's a net of close to $500,000 less.
Did that make sense? And food service, their budget was due to me yesterday. They're still working on it, but we will have an update by the finance committee. And the reason we're showing it together and separate is because food service really is self-balancing,
right?
So it doesn't really affect us, but when it comes time for you to approve the budget, you have to approve it. You're going to have food. Thank you, Ms. Brady.
Tell us your sentences.
So our estimated expenditures are, we're expecting about flat, but the little bit of a difference is some rounding differences and such. So the food service, we are expecting So we're expecting a decrease in the general fund budget of $826,000, of which currently it's a decrease of $875,000 in the food service, or a difference of in the food service. So that's a $49,000 difference local in a food service.
Basically, there's not construction.
So that leaves us at estimated revenues at 53.5 and preliminary expenditures at 55.4. Right now, a shortage or a difference to balance the budget at 1.9. If you remember, we did start our budget this year with 1.6 in fund balance. Compounded with that, at the current level, compounded with that, we're expecting a decrease in revenues of about $500,000. So that's close to the $2 million that we're short here. And at that, we look again at the fund balance amounts at those levels. We do decrease with some possible savings that we're already looking at this year. We are looking at reducing current fund balance by the 1.6 that we used to balance it. And then if we maintain the same level for next year at the 1.9 that we're short right now.
Basically, what this is telling us is that we cannot continue to go at the same level that we're going. So some hard decisions are going to need to be made. We're going to be looking for some suggestions and looking for guidance.
So, from the taxing side of it, there's a chance that we're going to have to also pay money back to the mall again.
It could be.
It's a court decision. It's not our decision. It's the court's decision. I believe they're going to contest the appraisal again, so that's something to consider when they land new houses.
The utilities.
The electric, that's what I was asking about, but the utilities that you increased enough to deal with that.
So that's why we are only including a 2% conservative amount, because we are expecting to get additional property, but then it might be offset with something from the outlet.
And so are we working, is anybody working with the people at the CAD to make sure they've got all of our properties that... I mean, you know, it's like anything you do. When it's yours, you pay the most attention to it. The CAD, I believe, does an awesome job, but they've got the entire county to deal with. Is anybody, Dr. Gallaby, South Park, staff,
I'll reach out to them to make sure that
significant, and, you know, looking at, you know, it's the hospital or all these developments that have homes. If you've got a home, you're on the tax rolls.
Well, the hospital should be, we should start to get some assessed value this year. Unfortunately, we'll make up results until next year. Mm-hmm. But if we start this year, whatever's up, we'll get some partial assessment.
Well, it'll be in this year. This 16, 17 years where that's
going to come. By the time the bill goes out.
Exactly. And so we need to have that to look at, to see, you know, are we really going to debtor's prison, or does it look like, you know, we get a reprieve? And I have a feeling the hospital alone would probably.
Yeah, I mean, they've made significant work since
that. Significant, and all of these developments that have got, you know, homes on the ground. So I think it would be really behoove us to find out what that's looking like, and, you know, what the mall's looking like, too.
And Mrs. Searles, there's in the Thursday packet, you're going to receive a letter that we got from the CAD showing who had disputed their values.
Yeah, and we had quite a few of them that had their values corporation in the undeveloped land disputed their values, and they were lowered. And that's going to make a difference to us.
I'm looking at three large places.
Exactly. Those are the ones.
Are we a recurring first highest tax rate?
Yes.
With the highest tax rate on both sides?
On both sides.
I'm in an O and INS. I don't think we are.
Not
in INS. INS, I'm not sure.
No. We just received that. Renee, you put that together for us. I'll have to check and see. I know that in total, I looked at the total. We are tied with one other district. Do you remember that one?
We're the highest.
We're the highest. We've always been the highest. And but we can't go any higher. The TRA was our cap. That's
yes, the MNO can't go any higher.
Yeah, that's it. And so next Friday on the 12th, I don't know if everybody saw this, but there's a presentation that Jose Rodriguez will be giving on the inequality of school funding next Friday at Region 19 that we're all invited to go to. And, you know, do y'all have a lead on anything with that bring us money?
No, actually we do keep in touch as far as the funding template and so forth, that information. I haven't heard anything as far as any changes related to that. But we can definitely look and
because set some additional gonna happen. Time. The judge has ruled. I mean, something's going to happen. You'd think it'd be in our favor.
I think there's going to be some drastic changes that need to be made. I don't know, I'm sure we're going to look at where we're at in capacity. I mean, we need to look at, I guess, tough decisions.
And I believe the facilities master plan is going to address some of those things as far as capacity.
Absolutely.
In the next,
You're right. You're perfect.
Well, I'm just thinking closing schools or, you know.
Yes. So with that, we lead into the timeline. And we are going to make some minor adjustments only because we have the meeting timelines now that we have to adjust some of the things around to be able to ensure that we get some information in before our meetings and so forth.
Go ahead. Are you going to say something?
Oh.
Obviously, the biggest thing we're going to do is get those kids in the classroom, right, Dr. Galavis? Instead of at 94% attendance, we need 98%. I mean, if everybody's got to get a bicycle, it'd behoove us to, plant the seed and reap the harvest. Because, am I right, we're like 94, 96?
96.4.
That's long term.
Right, because that the attendance fluctuates, but so does enrollment.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question. So, Martha.
Yes.
Don't tell me no.
So, there is 1.2 $2,000 in salary increases.
The 2 million?
2,000. I wish it was 2,000. 2 million, I'm sorry. 2 million in salary increases, and we're in a hole. How much?
2 million.
2 million. That's so why are we moving forward?
No, we're not. Go ahead.
Well, we're moving forward because that's on our list of priorities. On the budget priorities, the first thing we need to do is cover that deficit. So that's the question, is how can we cover that? Down here it says that administration, cabinet, we met and hashed this out and we decided that we would look at cutting 10%.
10%?
10% out of
the budget. Out of the 2 million?
Mm-hmm. No, out of the budget. That would be 5 million.
That would be how much?
5 million.
Does that include the salary increases?
No, that's the first cut to be able to afford something off of this list.
Have you, you know how there's have you done the freeze in travel already, or is there like a date that you're planning to consider, any?
Well, that's what cabinet's been discussing. Travel is one, food is another, surprise.
Travel what?
Is one thing to consider. Right now, we're not taking anything off. Off the table. So far as I know, everything is available.
And what Martha said at Cabinet 2 is that we need to allow the campuses and the departments to make those cuts. You know what I mean? Because they know what their campus improvement plan says, they know what they have to do as far as interventions. So if they come to me and they say, Annette, you have to cut 10%, you know.
No, they need to know where to
go. Right, so she's not saying necessarily this is where, she said this is the funding source, which is 199, and this is what you have to cut. And so that person would have to then, we live within our means, and the things that we would like to have, yeah. I mean, if we're going to have to just make those kind of decisions. But one of the things I thought, you know, I really could, I know my office is Peter Travel. Yes, excuse me, though we didn't have a tug. And that was it. Because, you know, that's what we're going to probably look at. But it will be up to the individual departments. She'll help guide them, but that's what we discussed, right?
Right, we'll give them a target. And then just like it was this year, we started from zero. They didn't just get whatever they got last year.
Right.
They had to come in and explain what they needed the money for. And so we're gonna do that process.
Right, and then we have to consider hiring freeze and...
Hiring freeze, travel freeze, expenditures.
The other thing that I guess the short term is expenditure versus revenues. The other critical thing is the fund balance and how we replenish it into a green line. Because, you know, everything else is pretty good, but when you look at especially the Fitch reports and the other report, it's our fund balance that really holds us from really getting an upgrade. And so we need to make sure that we look at that. It would be nice to address it short term, but for sure.
And that's one of the things that, if you remember when I first got here, the first thing we did was reduce revenues, which was easy for me to do because I know what the revenues are. I worked with the finance department, we recalculated. And so, with a stroke of a pen, we can say this is what we think the revenue is. What's not so easy is to reduce the expenditures, which have been projected, have been budgeted at the same level as those revenues. So when we move down the revenues, it's been harder to move the expenditures down to keep in line with those. And so basically that's Dr. Galavis's point, is that we need to get 55 million is the revenue number, then the expenditure number needs to be 55 million or less. So right now that's the challenge, is moving the revenues, the expenditures back down to be in line with what our revenues actually are. The other thing is with the opening of Reyes, I mean, everybody knew that was going to be a hit. But I think that we were all thinking that, okay, after Reyes, 1 year of famine, the next year we were going to get a bunch more kids from the Pied Piper, and that we were going to be back in the black. Unfortunately, what we've been learning from our friends from Jacobs is that it's going to be more than a year that we're going to have to make up for those costs. So this is, we're working on a 5-year rolling projection of revenues, and we've just gotten their enrollment projections to put into that calculation. But the one thing that's not covered by the facility's master plan is the property value. So they're not projecting on that side, so that's going to be up to us to try and figure out what do we think that the revenues will be on that side.
The amount of development just next year is going to be pretty expensive. I mean, pretty explosive, with just these two across the way and the hospital. That's when we start to realize the taxes. So
the bigger issue when that happens is our tax base is growing faster than our student population. Mm-hmm. So we end up negative more than not going forward.
So we're looking at all those
things. Has anybody talked to Grant Ryder?
Yes.
I just hear more expense when I hear that, Lori.
You get it. Your page.
Not on staff. I don't feel comfortable getting somebody on staff.
No. You get it your page. You don't get it. You don't.
Yeah, but I guess.
Well, maybe there's a consultant for that. We could actually say, hey, go out and get a release of that, and you get.
We've been begging for this for 15 years. You know, like a second job, you know, get a little job at the Circle K in the evening. We have a somebody, a grant writer that can give us, you know, that little
boost. It's not going to make it a shortfall, even.
And we could sure make these campuses.
And Ms. Charles, we have in conjunction with Renee, Mr. Guerra has been working on some grants. The challenge with that is to have an administrator or a principal to be able to take on the project management. So there have been some opportunities, but it also depends on who wants to take on the challenge. And I know Dr. Kearney has worked on some. I know with SHAC, we had a $50,000 there. Yes. With Ms. Massey on the STEM, and then of course they have some of the federal programs that they manage, like Ms. Massey does on the Perkins and the migrant and so forth. So definitely that too, it can be a challenge to be able to have somebody to manage those. But yes, there's been a few that we've received.
We also kind of forgot about the low-hanging fruit here, guys. We have a lot of property out there that we should at least put out there to see what we can get. We have a ton of property that's we use, you know, and some that we don't. I mean, I hate to say it, we do. There's going to have to be some shortfalls here. And we have a lot of unused property on the rolls, and it'd be nice to see what they're worth and see if we can make some of that.
You know what? Even
they're going to talk about that.
And even what would be good is the land right next to Bill Childress, where it could be developed and then hopefully bring in kids. So I'm sure it's going to be in the same power with the presentation.
Okay, but
Mrs. Sarah,
with the next item. Mrs. Charles did bring up a good point, though, because that's the other thing that we were looking at. Mm-hmm. It's not only decreasing the expenditures, also the other side is increasing revenue. So like you said, the attendance, the enrollment, the grants. I got a list today of possible grants that I'm sending over to the finance department. We did meet with someone who talked to us about some of the grant writers, like not an employee, but
yes.
A grant writer. Uh-huh. Unfortunately, his reference did not check out.
She's to attend.
So we're looking at rebates, where the rebates that we're getting to match, to make sure we're maximizing those. And then, of course, we have two baskets of surplus tickets. So, that's, I mean, every little bit.
Yeah, Penny Smith Nichols, and Nicole Smith Dimes.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I have one that's already a teenager. Thank you. I actually, this is probably the earliest we've gotten such numbers. Usually we get them in April or May, so thank you.
And you know, the really nice part about this right now, it's like, oh, you gotta be kidding, we're broke. It's not gonna be this. This is the worst case scenario. And it isn't gonna be this bad as we move forward, is my opinion.
Yes, I don't believe 2% is accurate.
I agree. But
I think that
do we have an estimate as to how many kids from the district are currently going to other school districts?
We have
in our school boundaries.
We have numbers. If they're in our boundaries, we not necessarily can't count them. But what we did do is we got open records requests from PPISD, so we were able to get the kids that are in 79912, 79932, 79835, and then Childress.
Mm-hmm. And then we can do it through the GIS.
Pardon?
We can do it through.
We can plot them in the GIS, right?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. We can give them that, yes.
Do we know approximately how many kids we're not serving?
Yes, we do.
Is that in the next presentation?
Yeah, it
is. Stealing your thunder?
No.
That one actually is not in the next, so I'd have to go and I could bring that on Monday.
Yes, last question. Yes, I'm done. I'd love to see that number just for you.
Mm-hmm.
He would love to see this information on the 23rd. I'm just kidding.
No, 23rd.
The day after you leave on Saturday, I want you to be.
We did request it. We have an open record.
So you're going to be available.
We'll be adjourned, and the time is 7:13. And as the president will call the other meetings.
It is 7:13.
Time is 7:13, and this is a special board meeting of the Gunnedale Independent School District.
Ms. Fritzy.
Yes. Here.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Right here.
Present.
Mrs. Quintana?
Here.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Here.
Mrs. Torres?
Here.
And Mrs. Stevens?
Still here.
Item number two, ABC's master plan. The job record dates clerks and clerks report.
Before you go through every single one of these responses?
Yes.
Can I ask a favor?
Yes, sir.
Just a favor. Since it's all very well documented in black and white, can you just kind of gloss over them, or does everybody here feel like they need to go word by word every single one?
I'm going to give you the summary.
Thank you.
And the entire report is available online as of today. And
so it's just community dialogue one, right?
That is correct.
Yes.
Community dialogue two is the end of this month. So. Sure. So, President Fritzy, members of the board, Dr. Galavis, good to be with you today. And we're going to do a couple brief presentations. Adrian, as you mentioned, it's going to be a brief overview of the community dialogue results. What I want you to hear is kind of the highlights, and then, you know, dig into all the comments, dig into all of that, all of the numbers. And then I'm going to take that down, and I'm going to pivot and go to a presentation on options development, where we had last week, we came and had an all-day options development work session to figure out different solutions for your facilities for the next 5 years. What you're going to see are five different options that we came up with, and as I'll explain, I believe that as we, you know, this process is intentionally spaced out to give us time to digest the numbers, dig into it, do, you know, quality assurance tests, and to make sure viability of options. I think we're going to get down to four by next week for the steering committee. I'll explain which one I think goes and why. And then I think with the steering committee, we could even get down with their input down to three to bring to the community at large to get their feedback. Three main options, and then I'll talk about another one there regarding assets that you have like land. And so I'm going to do that presentation. Then I'm going to take down the PowerPoints and bring up the screens that we actually use and the data we actually use to develop the options, and let you invite you to query them and you know, to look at what we looked at. Alex has GIS uploaded with all of your student data, all your school data, all the boundaries. So if you have questions about, you know, hey, what this student's moving there, are you sure that can work? He can drill in and actually snap those kids and show you the profiles. And we just like to bring everything to the table. Okay, to be transparent. That's part of the core of what we do in our process, to be open, transparent at every step. And as a part of that, real briefly, what we'd like to do with these is ask the steering committee member to co-chairs to come to the options development meeting to talk to the steering committee about what they saw and heard, so that it's not, you know, us going into a black box and close, you know, smoke-filled room and creating options without any, you know, transparency there. So Dominic was there, and Joseph Bozo-Negra was there, from both steering committee co-chairs. So I asked, Dominic was gracious enough to come, and all I asked him to do was say, Dominic, tell him what you heard, tell him what you saw. And that's it. And then that way you kind of hear a third party observation as to what we did that day. And then I'm going to go through the presentation. So if you don't mind, just 2 minutes.
Sure. Ladies and gentlemen of the board and administration, it's my pleasure to be here again with you all. I miss you all very much. Really do. Every single one of you. And no, really, really. No, really, really, I do. I'm getting a little choked up thinking about being here right now, so thank you for allowing me to speak to you. So I was elected as the committee chair, along with Mr. Bocanegra and Mr. Gill, to serve in that role. And really, I took it very seriously in that I felt it was my duty to be able to have an unbiased opinion of the facts that were being presented, and to go into these steering committees and to go into these community dialogues and kind of understand and listen to what the community is saying, and very rarely provide my input as to what I felt should happen or what I thought was happening around the district, but really just get the sentiment of the community in an effort to bring it to you here so that you can help us develop some options. I did take the day off from work to do the facilities option
work session.
And so we were here a full day. We lasted past 4 o'clock to just chew over the facts and to figure different options. And again, I took it very responsibly to just listen to what types, what the facts were, and listen to what the community was saying. And some of the folks that were in that work session had mentioned during the work session that they're very skeptical. They were saying when they had heard, they had been to the community meetings at the high school, I'd heard those facts and it didn't make any sense to me, and I don't agree with it, and that's just not right. There's something fishy going on here. And so we were able that full day to again go over the data, go over GIS, go over the demographics and the study and figuring out where we're going to be in the next 5 years. And those people in the room really turned what bad feelings into good vibes, and they were understanding of the facts and understanding that something needs to be done. And so there was a strong sentiment amongst the group that something's got to happen, and that the status quo or staying the way that we are isn't the answer to where we're going, and that we need to do something, and they took it upon themselves to provide some options for your review tonight. I'm so happy that Jacobs is here. They've done a great job. They really have, and we've never had this in our district before. And this is really setting a great direction for the future, for the 5 years, and then for future 10 years. This is going to have a lasting impact on what we do as far as what we do with our budgets, what we do with our facilities, what we're doing with our students, what we're doing across the board. And it's great to be able to meet Ms. Unaga with your budget presentation to kind of see the challenges that we got. And now we've got a great opportunity to figure out what we're going to do to try to overcome some of the challenges that are going to face us in the coming years with regard to our budget. And we've got the opportunity right now to do something about it. And I'm just so thrilled to be able to still be here and still be with smiling faces back at me that you all like seeing me here. So anyway, that's all I wanted to say. Thank you for your time. And lastly, I just want to reiterate again that when we came up with these options, it wasn't me saying, I want to do this and we're going to do this all, you know, that school's old. Forget about it. I've walked it. You all agree with me? Yes, yeah? It wasn't that. It was me listening to what people were saying, listening to the facts, and then coming up with the ideas. And so I take a lot of pride in that's the way it went. And it's, you're going to see the options. They might shock you. They might make you happy. They might make you sad. But it's options that we're going to be presenting. And with your input, we want to be able to create a good plan together. So thank you again for your time.
Thanks, Dominic. Okay. So like I said, I'm going to start with the community dialogue results report, and I'm going to just go through, give you the highlights and the summary. Dive through all the details as at your leisure, and of course you can email any questions. So the first thing, who responded? We had, you know, 80 some odd folks come to the dialogue, which is pretty good. We had 54 questionnaires filled out. You never have one-to-one. There's always folks who go home, fill it out online, or do whatever. You had 158 people who filled that out online. Not bad. Good. Your respondents, about two-thirds identified, just this is demographic profile, 40 years or older, about 70% were parents, guardians, grandparents, or former students. So a lot of folks most folks who responded were intimately related with the district. 72%, in fact, identified as a current and former employee. Not uncommon. Very often when we do these, we have a very large percentage, if not majority percentage, respondents of employees or former employees of the district. Why? Because they're most engaged in knowing what's going on and interested in feel the impact. So you have a lot of employee feedback here, demographically about three-fourths Hispanic, which matches your profile more or less. Okay? And so that's the general profile of who responded. And then one thing to note, though, is when you look at the responses, not every individual answers every single question. All right? And so you're going to see some numbers that are going to bounce and forth. So that's why I show percentages by and large. If you try to tally up all the counts, you're going to see that, you know, they change by number because not everybody answers every question. It's going to be the ones that impact them. All right. When we looked at the first question, which was, what kind of solutions would you want us to consider in an overcrowded school situation? Far and away, the number one option that they asked for was changing boundaries. Far and away. Okay. Followed by, you know, maybe an addition, and then, hey, you could even use portables. Temporary buildings. We don't have that in our options right now. But you know, there's the responses. Changing boundaries. When you look at an undercrowded school, underutilized school, boundaries. Again, first thing people gravitated towards. And so we do have, you'll see in the options, there are boundary changes in all of the options. And you'll see more of the why in a little bit. When we asked the community, would you support updating older facilities to provide modern learning environments? This would include specialized learning environments, technology updates, teacher collaboration areas, etc. 92% strong support and support. I look at those two things. I aggregate strong support and support because I want to see how much a detraction is there, and there's not much. Who are the respondents? Staff. Both parents, guardians, people who are invested in your schools. Okay, so there's a strong sense there to invest. When we asked the questions about adding or expanding skilled tech programming, the health sciences were the top five. We asked them to list of all of these different options, what are your top five? And the top five were STEM, healthcare, biomed, criminal law enforcement, criminal justice law enforcement, and EMT. So by and large, your healthcare sciences are rounding out the top five. Now it's interesting, if you want to dig into the weeds a little bit and look at the differences, that there were some differences between the 54 attendees who filled out the response and the web. The people who were filled it out online were also very much interested in automotive sciences. They pushed criminal justice and law enforcement to the top five. Culinary arts, hospitality, linguistics, renewable energy, and EMT. So there were some differences between the web, and so when you look at these online or there later, the way that we look at it is we look at individual responses in paper, we look at individual responses online, we add them together for the total individual responses, and then we see if the group responses for those people who filled out the questionnaire in a group at the community dialogue, if they track in the same kind of answers and the same response rates as all of the individuals. So what we do in the groups is the individuals who filled out that paper questionnaire get together and then they try to answer the same questionnaire. And so we kind of see, when people get together, does it sway the individual responses in one direction or the other, or do they remain consistent? And here they were pretty much consistent. You can see the orange is the group and the blue is the individual. And that's how I do it in all the graphs. So you can see group versus individual. What are the top three challenges facing the athletic programs? Of all of the choices, the available budget and the equity of facilities and fields across the district were the number one challenges. And not uncommon, you have schools that were built in different eras and they have different needs and hey, I want what they have and all that kind of stuff, right? What are the top three challenges facing the fine arts programs? Additional fine and arts programming in the elementary and middle levels was the number one. When people ask about, you know, what do we need in fine arts, we need more programming at your K-8 levels. That was the number one thing they said. So from a facility standpoint, what does that mean? That means when you look at it, as we get down the road, do we consider any kind of modifications to have, you know, certain fine arts facilities and spaces that are in each area? If you do, what's the cost to renovate to that? Do we add that to the package? Those kinds of things. What are the greatest needs for special ed? This is an open-ended question. And as you read the comments, you'll see staff, and more staff. That's what people said about special ed. Some comments about facilities, but it was basically HR related. Include indicator support for replacing outdated computers. They're 93%. Again, strong support there. So you may, is one of the things you could consider is... So the question is this a mom and apple pie question, right? Is it like everybody says yes?
Yeah.
What I look for is this. Where's the strongly no support? What I want to see is there a critical mass of people like, I learned on a chalkboard and so can you? And there's that contingent out there.
But we didn't get any.
You didn't get that contingent. Why? Because you had mainly teachers and so forth. And people, parents, and people who were intimately related with the district. You didn't have as many. You had about maybe 25% Joe Jane taxpayer who's not have a kid in the district and doesn't work.
And it's also a younger district, so
yeah.
The growth is pretty much.
If you know the needs, I mean, why would we ignore that?
Yeah.
It just seems like
So anyway, yeah, I just want to see, that's one of the standard questions, is there organized opposition to those newfangled things? And, you know, we didn't see it here. So this is the first forced choice question. We say you can have small neighborhood schools, you can have low operational budget / taxes, or you can have, and you can have rich, diverse educational programs. Pick two. Can't have three. Doesn't work. So what people said is half of the respondents were favoring the diverse educational programs, with a little over a third small neighborhood schools. What this means is we're willing to, this people think we're willing to pay to get what we want. Okay? Now, I say that, and I need to put an asterisk. What I recommend is that as you move forward with this, and a master plan would be presented and, you know, accepted, and you move on from that, okay, now we've got to fund this, that, and the other, is that you actually look to get some statisticians to come in and do some surveys of likely voters. Because let me be the first to tell you that this survey is for those who showed up. So it's a selection bias. And you saw that in the profile. This is not a likely voters survey. This is a who showed up survey. This is the staff, employees, parents, the 75% of those.
We can use this as justification to the voters if we were to go out for another bond, because that's what I see there.
Yeah, that's, you see that, right?
I see that right
now. What you want to do next is, and I have some recommendations of folks that I'm not affiliated with whatsoever. I've just seen their good work. And you can say, okay, you know, do a survey of likely voters and tell me thresholds. Here's this amount. What's your support? What about this amount? What's your support? Tax impacts, and you can get a better idea based upon what the likely people showing up to vote for something would be. That's not what this is.
This is just the people that showed up.
Yes, that is correct.
But you know, we had such a diverse group show up, mm-hmm. that I have to tell you, I think that kind of is a likelihood of voter approval.
Well,
because we had old and young, had new and been here for a long time, and it was amazing to hear the support that people have for education.
No, it was good. And when I say, another thing is, a lot of your voters are your employees. A lot of your voters are your parents. And so there is some overlap here. What I'm saying is that when you get, like when you're ready to pull a trigger on something, it's a nice insurance policy to have.
I felt very encouraged, honestly.
And the vast majority of the comments, as you read all the comments, the vast majority of the comments were very positive, constructive. There's always a few zingers, but you know, vast majority very positive. So, currently, based upon what we had, we realized this number is actually probably more like 135 now, 136, but it's close. 130 right now, 131 acres of unused land. That is land that a parcel of land where a school is not sitting on. Okay.
You're talking parcel.
Parcels. With nothing on it,
okay.
Right now. So we did not count the parcels that the school is sitting on, and sometimes that parcel, depending on 15 acres, right. 20 acres, 50 acres, whatever it is. So one of the questions is, well, what ideas do you have used for some of this land? So essentially, about 44% of the respondents mentioned something to do with what you could build on it. And this is my categorization of it. You could, you know, they didn't say anything, so I just said undefined. Athletic, hey, build an athletic complex, build a skilled tech center, blah, blah, blah. About a quarter said sell it and use it to help fund programs. And then, you know, remain 22% were like, well, we don't know, hold it, you don't know. And so what you'll see in the options as we look at it, and I'm going to ask you some questions about the land. We look at what are the opportunities and assets that a district has and what are the needs. And one of the assets that you had is quite a bit of land. And one of the needs are funding. You have about $70.5 million in need in your facilities. That's going to exceed your bonding capacity by a good percentage. And so we're looking at, well, what are some assets. So we want to talk to you about land and what things that we can use as an asset. What do you believe are the greatest facility-related needs for admin? You're sitting down, so that's good. Parking. I know that's a shock. But when you read through it, what's interesting here is as you read through the comments, you know, there's a diversity of responses here, right? But it's also mentioned that you can use some more central office space, teachers were saying, hey, I need a better place for, we don't have a good place for professional development, blah, blah, blah. And so actually, in all of the options, we also talk about moving administration into where you have existing capacity that's underutilized. And so we'll talk about that in a minute. Briefly share any facility issue that you believe the district should consider. This is completely open-ended, and we usually expect, I expect a, you know, a whole bunch of different diverse responses. There was a theme. And the theme was take care of, maintain your current facilities in an equitable and effective manner. Like all the comments as you read through that, there's like 109, something like that. It's make sure what I have is similar to what she has, and make sure that, you know, we are keeping up our facilities and don't let them rot. And that's the gist, the short version, which you've already been doing, which to me is just more of it. This is part of the culture that you've built around your facilities. Is you need to take care of what you got, you do it well, and that's why your facilities don't have a whole bunch of needs. 70 million is a lot of numbers, is a big number, but we're going to get that down. We're not going to recommend the whole 70 million. And I'll explain that again a little bit. So that's the brief overview of the community dialogue results. And like I said, the full report in color is available online. What I wanted to get to next, this is a summary of the board work session and the data that we used. A summary of the options development session and the data that we used. When we do options development, we look at planning units. So we take down, we look at your high schools as a unit, both the Northwest Early College and then your main high school. We looked at, because you have perfect feeder patterns in your elementary, in your middle schools, we looked at the Alderete Middle School and its feeder elementary feeders, and the Conatillo Middle School and its elementary feeders. And we looked at current capacity, the program capacity, which is going to be a constant. It's going to change individually by school 3 to 5% over, you know, every year, but on the whole, it's going to be very constant. Next, we looked at the enrollment current and enrollment in 5 years, the 2020 mark. We looked at the conditions. So when you look at your high school, here's the data summary. You're flat to increasing 68 kids. I mean, that's a couple of classrooms spread out among, you know, both schools. You're growing so slightly at your high school, and you're over capacity. Now, 105% capacity, I've mentioned this again and again, but I'm going to say it because it bears repeating. 105% is really 80% of your maximum capacity, and here's why. Your high schools are we get the maximum capacity. Walk all we look at every single room. This is being used for English. Okay, it gets 22. This one's being used for special ed, 15. This one's being used for guidance, none. That kind of thing, right? And then at a high school, we multiply it by 0.75. Why? Because you will never operate a high school at 100% of its theoretical capacity. First of all, just people moving about. You have teachers don't teach every single period every day. You have AP classes. You have yearbooks. You have Latin 4. You know, who knows? You have these little tiny things that pop up, and they create inefficiencies in your system. And so we factor that in so that if you're at 100%, you're really at 75% of your maximum, which is full but doable. Okay, it's functional capacity. So when we say you're 105% utilized, it's 105% of 75%, which is 80.
But that's using the standard format. Right now, if you walk into our high schools, we have, I think, 12 traveling teachers because they don't have classrooms of their own. I mean, There's overcapacity.
Absolutely. It's crowded. It's not hemorrhaging, but it's crowded. Yeah. Now, one of the things that we talked about is, you know, there could be some operational ways that you can minimize, you know, teachers running around on a cart looking for a space to teach.
Right.
You know, and so to nudge a 3 to 5% utilization to get it, you know, you can work on some things that are not capital related, that are not facility related.
Operation.
Teaming. Working on the master schedule, those kinds of things that would be beyond the scope, you know, of facilities. Now, there are options that relieve the high schools. from utilization. It involves moving ninth graders out in two different basic types of scenarios. We're going to look through that. Okay. So that's what we, and the condition needs are $20.97 million. Paul Mills, what he did in as a lead for Jacobs on this project for the condition side and all that, he put in at your high school something that, like an HVAC repair that could be pushed to the next year, but he put it in to this program. That's a significant dollar amount. So we could save, you know, if we need to, which I think we will, we can just say, okay, well, we're going to really look at that in another possible bonding cycle rather than this, because we need to, you know, prioritize our needs here. All right, Alderete and its elementary feeders. Alderete, Canutillo, Davenport, and Reds. Currently, you're increasing 253 students, according to the projection, okay? And what you see is that your total capacity, K-8 or pre-K-8 in this area is 3,200. Your enrollment now is 2,112. You're going to 2,365. There's your increase. But you're at an overall utilization of 74%, which is comfortable.
Except for Reyes.
Except for Reyes, right? And so this is bound, this is what we call a boundary change. When you have a half full school and a 100% full school, you boundary change. Right, and so
we're skirting on Title I.
Yes, you are. You're basically you're staring at the end of that. And yes, there's no way around it.
Targeted. They'll be targeted.
Yes, yeah.
They'll still be targeted.
We can still still have some room to play.
Targeted.
But.
Targeted.
Thank you. What's the word?
Targeted.
It's not one of these hickledy-pickledy things. Martha said I had to use that in the presentation, so I found my foray. You'll have to define that for me later.
They already Googled it.
All right.
It exists.
So anyway, so yeah, we're going to have to, that's a strategic thing. Now, when we say in our facilities master plan, when we say boundary change, unless specified, it's not saying we're going to move Elm Street to Main Street. It's not a boundary process. In some cases, we were suggesting, you know, we'll talk about, you know, where we think these groups of kids can go to this school, south of this street, and south of this street can go there. But with this kind of thing, that's going to require, you know, we can work it through recommendations as to what, give you an idea of where that should be, and then, you know, you would work it out demographically to make sure that it's going to balance your needs from a financial perspective and all that. But you're going to need a boundary change. Now, here's the tale of two cities, because that's Alderete and its feeder pattern. And this is Canutillo Middle School and its feeders. You're decreasing, 352 students. Here's, this needs to soak in. You will have, between these four schools, 1,878 extra seats by 2020. 1,878 extra capacity between these four schools. 73% of all of your district's excess capacity is among these four schools. Barring any changes, you'll be operating at less than half your capacity for all schools except Damian, which would be operating at two-thirds its capacity by 2019-20. That's big.
Garcia too.
Garcia
all
the too.
Development down there. I don't buy that Garcia number.
What
Garcia
happens
number
is
make any sense.
So Garcia's boundary incorporates some of the growth areas, but it also incorporates areas that are aging and not growing, and in fact declining.
Correct.
What you have is you're counterbalancing.
There's over 500 new homes being built, and you're suggesting that none of them are going to have kids.
So when you look at 500 homes.
Units. Just right now, we're talking about Canutillo Village, or sorry, Gordland Village, and we're talking the Just those right. two, not even including the one on Art Craft.
So
let's just talk about five.
What you got to think about? Here's a very important thing. Mm-hmm. Couple things. One, our enrollment projections, they pick up on the growth that has begun to hit through the cohort survival methodology, which means we look at grade by grade growth into the thousands of a percent over 10 years, and when you see a trend moving, then we adjust the enrollment projections. Okay? Because the greatest predictor of your near-term enrollment is your past enrollment.
Of course.
Right? Now, the speculative, which is growth that hasn't hit yet.
Correct.
When you look at 500 homes, first of all, it's important to keep in mind that this is a plan through 2019-20. Those homes, when they're completed, will be perhaps during this cycle, perhaps not. You never know how these things go.
Correct. I'd say half of those.
Assuming half come through, you're looking at, Alex, what are we talking about yields? You know, we have
family homes like 0.2.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's pretty
helpful. I understand the Reyes side. The bigger the home, the less kids.
Yeah,
that's obviously what's
but
happening.
Even, yeah.
But these homes are targeted for single families. They're
right.
smaller.
But a single family home is still going to be at about a quarter.
Single family Mexican home.
The Mexican family.
It's looked at an economic issue,
that's
too.
True.
That $100,000 to $200,000, you can get three kids. $200,000 and up,
not aggregate.
You're going to get fewer.
Not on an aggregate.
This is what we've been fed.
I know,
years,
but it's not true.
Everyone. And then I'd like to tell you, we've got our personnel committee minutes from December. They're asking for another teacher for Miss Carter, which would be Garcia.
Yeah.
Her high growth campus. They need another teacher. Well, then tell them that because we won't have to pay that, for that.
Well, what you want to do is all you need to do. Look at the background report with the 10-year enrollment in the schools, and you can just see it. I mean, it's not there. I can tell you that
taking into account the 10 years between the recession and now, of course, it was going to go down. You, is there nothing further back that you can equate growth? Because in those 10 years, you're taking 2006 to 2015, and that number, unfortunately, that was recession time. We hit a hard time.
It wasn't 08, sure, right. And everybody, nationwide, you see a dip in 08, 09, 10, and then it starts to come back in, right. So that's why we wait the last couple years further more than we look at, you know, years 7, 8, 9. So we kind of factor in what's coming in the pipeline last, you know, and that gets a higher weight into your projections. Here's my take on your enrollment. Through 2019-20, you're flat because your growth is being counterbalanced by your decline, and
aging.
You are aging in some areas. That's true. Now,
stop it.
I didn't say you were aging.
Right. Look right at me.
The growth that you're talking about will likely hit, but it's not going to turn the tables before 2020. I think it's going to start after. And the way that I understand that this master plan in your long-term cycle is that you're preparing for the growth by right-sizing temporarily to allow the growth, when it happens, to fill. In the options, we are going to recommend Lone Star be converted into not a facility. The building has lots and lots of needs. It's very underutilized. You've got Bravo, and you've got the DAP program in there, and you've got a lot of empty space. You've got asbestos. You've got a whole world of hurt. But it has historical value. That's the only building that we're recommending right now that you tear down and make it like a recreational facility, a recreational park that becomes like something that people can actually use, because right now you can't use it. Unless you want to dump a good money after bad. Okay? Now, everything else, we're recommending that you look at a repurposing. Mm-hmm. That you shift its temporary purpose to allow you to meet your budgetary needs over the next four or five years. And as the growth happens, you can repurpose again as students come in. But what I'm trying to do with this master plan is to not to give in to the speculation that the growth that you've been talking about coming is going to hit right now. Because it's not.
What about,
according to our numbers?
Maybe the growth is coming, but it won't be with established families or school-age kids. Maybe they're new families with kids that they're going to have while they're there. And that's what you're suggesting.
Yes.
And you're right.
Yes, and then what I'm talking about is the growth that you've been sold is happening right now. Kids are going to be, you know, batting down the hatches to get in. Is happening in a pocket. A pocket.
What about repurposing?
But not everywhere else.
What about repurposing Lone Star into central office?
Ooh.
Yeah. Jesus. Like
that. He just wanted to say that.
You just want him to go over there.
If you look at the old architectural design, the wood beams. There's some hope there.
You can stop.
Now.
Could you ask for a mask?
Okay. Yeah. So if I may, go ahead.
One thing that David was saying is, so you feel a little bit better, because Martha Wichiko, she's over there. One of the things that we did, you know, with the budget that we want to dovetail in, when we were talking about the teachers, one thing we did say, and Martha agreed, is that we're utilizing our teachers to the fullest. They're almost overutilized. So our needs assessment that we do has been extremely successful. Almost, as Martha says to me, you know, too successful.
I don't think we have a problem with the personnel. Okay. We have a problem with facilities because we have not capacity.
That's right. So what I'm saying is we have, so in other words, you know, we've done a lot of things, right? You know, I mean, putting up those things in the process. But and we needed to have that on the school up there. We know that.
All this is right.
And so what we were looking at is, and when we were talking about this, is the repurposing. And some of the ideas, because there is plenty of facilities that we can repurpose and have a beautiful facility.
But the cost of repurposing has also got to be
high. That is true. I'll talk about that, because my view on that is that think about your district's growth as distinct blocks of time. You've got 0 to 4 years where you're flat because your growth and your decline are balancing. You've got 5 to 10 years where you're probably going to see you're still going to have some decline, but then you're going to have folks moving back in because people start to move out, and then folks move back in, and that's where you start to build that back up. And then you look at years like, you know, 10 on, and you're probably looking at pretty significant. And so we're thinking about it that this is an era, this is a distinct period of time with distinct data and realities, that as you do grow, which you will in the long term, you are fiscally and your facilities are prepared for that, rather than operating so as such an underutilized manner that you're having a hard time digging out, right? And so with these things, so let me just toss it out there. One more thing. Your central office, your admin, you've got your central office, your Lone Star building. You know, you know how small that building is. You know, $4 million, basically, in needs.
That's to repair everything.
Yeah, right. And we probably get that down to 4.5.
Yeah.
It's worth it.
Right? And the questions are going to be, is for every dollar we put in, we have to look at tax rates. We have to look at what wouldn't go into the options because of that and all of those things. So what are your thoughts based upon the data summary that we have? At high school, we could use some extra space. There's a high degree in interest in expanding medically oriented skilled tech programs. PK-8, your AMS have plenty of extra capacity, but it's growing, except Davenport, kind of, you know, flat there. CMS feeders are declining and drastically overbuilt for population currently. Your Lone Star building has historic value, but poor condition and barely utilized. Your central admin lacks parking and professional development spaces. And, you know, everything, the facilities master plan has to facilitate your overall strategic plan and budget. And so, knowing we know with the budget projections, we have to look ahead at that 2021 year and realize that something's got to change. And so with all of that data that we had to plan with, before we start getting into kind of what we thought, what are your thoughts?
What about bringing in the middle school is what age group to what age group?
Currently, your middle school configuration is 6'8", which is 1,229 students.
Bringing 6 back to the elementary. Well, I'm just, we're throwing out all options.
Yeah.
We have to throw out all options, and then we could go from there. I mean, bringing, you know, the 6 back down to the elementary schools is one.
Yep.
The other option is 7, 8, 9.
Yep.
Or, and then another option is 7th and 8th. And then making either AMS or CMS a freshman center.
You're basically doing a rough.
That's what we're doing, yeah.
Yeah, so you already have all his options.
No, it's good. Keep going. Keep going.
I haven't even looked at your presentation.
No, that's fine. I'm glad. I wanted to kind of just solicit it. You know, what's your thoughts?
Boundaries, feeder patterns.
Yeah.
Making one maybe AMS or one of them a technical, like a career tech.
Skill tech. Yep.
Yep.
Or a STEM school.
Yeah.
Because that's what the demand is.
Right.
And AMS would be more logical because it's just right up to the high school. I mean, to the campus, the Texas Tech campus.
Okay.
So just throwing out ideas.
I'll be the first to say, have sixth graders in an elementary. What's your thoughts on it, Ms. Brigham?
What,
sixth graders in an elementary. Just
I had my first time, you know, actually when I was at Bill Childress, my first year I had over 700 kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then they let the sixth graders go, and I thought, this is cool. They're still paying me for this. Because, I mean, it was... you know, you can departmentalize within sixth grade, you can do a master schedule, the building was...
You're okay with sixth graders being around second, third graders?
You know,
I'm biased, I have a second grader.
But what we did do is we had kids, you know, I remember at Children's, we had kids reading to the, you know, when your sixth graders can go in and your sixth graders are the ambassadors, they come in and they greet the kids. You know, every new kid comes in, they go in, and you make them, you know, we're not talking about 200 sixth grades. We're talking 70 sixth grades.
At each school, yeah.
You know, we're not talking, so instructionally, I think it will be fine. If you differentiate the schedule for them.
Sure.
You know, and if you build, what you have to do is you still need to put those teachers, those middle school teachers at sixth grade, so that they're ready to make that jump, especially if you do a 7-day, I'm talking instructionally and because of accountability. But any of the options that Mr. Rodriguez said, I think the only one we didn't discuss was when you said
Texas Tech.
About the Texas Tech, the AMS one. Yeah. Everyone else, every other option you can see there's about, there's so many options.
Yeah. And, you know, is it, you know, and I'm not going
to... I'm just so pleased you guys are doing it. You're thinking of it all out loud.
Yeah. Can I just talk real quick? You know, Dr. X, Faber, and Isleta is probably the best one thinking outside the box in regards to their population is growing outside.
Right.
I mean, is leaving the district. So how do we reach out? And the thing is, here we have growth, but how do we... you know, attract more kids to say, you know what, I want to. And one of the most important things when you look at it's what programs, and of course that comes out of our M&O, that if we're able to develop that into our facilities, I think we're going to attract kids. Like if we were to create a STEM school or a Kate school or, you know, Austin and them are, and I think Socorro, I think Isleta's also doing it on all-female school.
That's another option. We didn't think of that option. But what you were saying, too, is exactly some of the things we're thinking of. You know, this board, I've heard you talk about a CTE.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's got to be a place for CTE.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You then also, too, you know, one of the things when you looked at the budget, when you look at, you have to marry the two. And you look at the budget, what we might have to do is just like what you said, a STEM school. We might have to come, you know, a dual language center. You know, bottom line is, a dual language model costs more money.
We all know that. But,
so, but you might not be able to have it in every, you know.
It might be like an international school.
That's
in
exactly right.
To,
like right. They shook home.
Yeah.
So. So you can do those things. I mean,
not in the 6,000 capacity.
This really is a wonderful thing.
In a 6,000 school district. 60,000, 45,000, I can see that because there's a lot of industry that gives us the money. But at the 6,000, we're talking STEM schools, we're talking these tech schools. Great, but those opportunities are already available for our students to do that.
At EPIC.
I just think if we do that, now we're digging ourselves into a deeper hole by developing another operational cost.
No, we have to do both. We have to do the budget and this. It has to be a marriage between the two.
Yeah. What we need to look at is what is the demand? What is the demand from parents that are moving into El Paso, and find out how we could supply that demand so that way they choose Gun of Deal. That's the goal. Like,
sure.
If not, you're going to have infill development and EPISD that still has it. You have all that smart growth. So if you get younger people that want to go into that type of, you know, development, let's say like the Montecito area where they're going to develop a school around it, and you have Mesita, which is, you know, dual language, then they're going to be attracted more to that than coming down to us, and it's going to have more effects on our growth.
And you know what? Here's the thing. When you want to look at that, remember that triangle, you pick two of the three, the same thing applies here. When we look at those options to make a magnet program, and there's an option where you could do that in here, talk about it. The way you get it is you have more scale. The way you afford it is you have more kids. When you have on your CMS feeder and you have, you know, very small schools and, you know, underutilized buildings, bring them together and you can afford to do those kinds of things. And you need a critical mass to make it even practically possible.
A school within the school, maybe, or a magnet program,
because one of the things you also want to do is, you said it, you want to attract kids in to where you have the space and you don't have the kids.
Like we do in at Northwest.
And so that exactly, a lot of your growth at Northwest is from outside the district.
Right.
It's people coming in because they want that programming. And
with that said, we're paying a really high price.
Yes, you are.
An incredibly high price to educate those kids who are not ours.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's a problem to me.
It's a yin yang.
Yeah, these aren't our kids. We need to see, Martha, can we please see what the return on our investment is? What's it cost per kid? Including their books, and we just looked at what we're going to pay them for books. We've got Princeton Review, we've got books, and then we've got their
educate kids.
Yeah, but then we've got their seed fund, and that's all we're getting. So it's a financial issue, Adrian. It is
a financial issue.
It is.
Well, then why have the program? It's going to attract people no matter what you do.
Yeah, but we're going to pay a premium for those people.
But that's
we don't pay a premium. To attract kids to go to Damian or to go to Davenport, right. We don't pay a nickel more for
that. But let's say we create a STEM school at CMS and it attracts a whole bunch of kids. Same problem. So either we have it, we dedicate ourselves to educate. I was the first one, and a lot of people here that were there. I didn't like Northwest Early College High School. I thought it was worthless. I thought it was worth. And I'm sure shooting myself right now by saying this, but I went to one event and it changed my mind. These kids are. The ones that want to do it.
Because you attended, they don't have them anymore.
Your fault
is on you, but we don't have them.
We'll look at that because you have the potential to build in actual K-8 magnet opportunities for students that may help fill, you know, your seats. And when you fill your seats at that level, you're filling your revenues.
What's that school in East Atlanta that teaches, like... they teach business and all that in that elementary.
Oh, they have like a market.
That's right. Huh?
Yeah, they have a market.
Well, micro society or micro?
Yeah, micro society.
The micro society.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not on the west side. I mean, we have to look at stuff where we're going to compete against EPISD and take their kids away. And so.
Yeah, and you've got the hospital coming in. And you've got this high interest in like the medical sciences as well at the high school level, and so you know perhaps you could build something that feeds up, and you're known for you know, preparing kids for the medical sciences, biomed, healthcare, EMT, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I always like the sort of sayings, you don't look behind you, you just look ahead and you leave.
Right.
Because if we keep looking behind us at EPISD and SYSD, that's great, but we can't match their funding.
We have to lead
by what we can do.
Right. And this idea is to, and I know it's unpopular to look at the enrollment projections and see this decline and those kinds of things. Oh, no, what about these homes coming up? And I'm telling you that by the next few years, even if the enrollment projections are off and you have some more growth, let's say it's 300 more kids. It's not going to be 600, 900. Not going to happen. Okay? You got plenty of capacity. Plenty.
Yeah. And that funding's delayed.
And so here, what I think you need to do is right-size your utilization for the next several years, and as the growth comes, and you want to, you know, you move central office into existing capacity, okay? You put a little in to repurpose it, but you don't go all out. And then once the kids start coming in, you move them back in, you build yourself a nice facility, but you can't afford to do that right now. So it's a kind of a stepwise thing. You're playing chess with this enrollment in the budget, and you're kind of, you know, positioning yourselves to be able to pounce when the revenue starts to exceed. But as you mentioned, as those property taxes come up, your free reduce goes down, you have lots of challenges in that front in the next several years, and we'd rather you be, you know, fitting within your capacity more comfortably than, you know, putting good money into empty space.
Dr. Galabese, I seriously doubt anything's being done, but we need to do something about getting Levittown and Hoover preoccupied. We need to offer something. I don't care if it's a tax abatement. We need to put those people back on the tax rolls. We've got two huge buildings sitting there. We're getting money. That's money in our pocket if they get back online.
It's a tax abatement.
You tell them, you know, you're supposed to pay 10%, you're going to only pay 9%. Yeah. And we want you here.
Because 9% is better than 9%.
Yeah, absolutely.
Remember, we used to do that.
We did it for every one of those buildings for 10 years.
I know it's not.
That's how Levittown and Hoover got here. Mm-hmm. And it's... I mean, it's something real. It can be money in the bank.
And there's still that funding to decide that we don't want it.
Yeah, but it's not going to kill you to have tax revenue because those people don't want people to work in their facilities.
It's going to be that dirty word when we start talking about it, Chapter 14. You know that. Very soon, with the hospital and all this development, we're going to be well over $2.5 billion. Chapter 14.
We're only going to have 14. Don't worry. Yeah.
Tell me about this land, because when I look at your, you know, when you have quite a bit of extra land, and I look at how we can help get things done, I see potential asset if there's not a near-term plan for it. Help me out, because what are the plans for the current land assets that you own? Like,
was grandfathered in that we've had for a while.
So some of it
was agriculture. Some was possible move to a district. The one that's just south of here, west of here. And then the other one was just left over from the Davenport building.
I think we should put up everything on the market.
Yeah, there was supposed to be an agriculture school.
Well, to see what's a bigger return. Like, it might be developers might want around. I know we have a lot of land in regards to, what's the school? Davenport.
Right.
That there's huge land around there that, you know, it might be developers like that could bring in more kids in comparison to
some. And Children's is
big. Not in Davenport.
Yeah, Childress.
Childress has about 58, a big 50-acre plot.
Yeah, there we go. Childress is the one I was talking about.
60 acres.
Yeah. Yeah. I think
that was supposed to be an agricultural tech school, and that never came to fruition. So a lot of it was earmarked for agriculture. Now, because
plans change, things move on.
It's been years since
I'm sure if you put that up right now, you're going to have developers, because everybody's pretty much landlocked, and then some of the new builders and developers are going to want to. I think we should just, hey, you know, the way it works is you put it out, you ask for proposals or bids,
right,
and then we see if we get a high dollar. We can always say no, but at
sure,
least we should be able to go look at that, and that would be good to replenish our fund balance.
I think Childress is obviously a good option because it'll open up two things. It'll open up, obviously, our fund because mm-hmm. we need that, but it also open up a possibility for new homes.
Right.
Which again, is that going to affect in the near term? But we're also looking long term.
You are looking, and it really, you are in a, you know, oftentimes I'll work with districts that, you know, Houston, for example, which direction are they going? You know, they're full and they're growing out the wazoo, right? You look at areas that are built out, and they've had their heyday, your neighbors, and now their population is starting to decline, and they have all this huge excess capacity. They don't have a near-term growth trajectory. It's we're settling into a slower reality for 20-some-odd years before that resurgence comes back because we're dense and all that kind of stuff. You're in a different one where you have this tale of two cities. You have a little pocket of growth. You have some population decline. But, you know, all of the drumbeat for the long term is a new kind of TO, a lot of growth and all that. But there's going to be lots of hiccups and changes in the middle of it. Your free reduced status and all those kinds of things are going to be going through some major upheavals along the way. So, again, you know, to belabor the point, I think it's worth it, you know, talking about, you know, it can, and to understand and for your community to understand is that this is a plan for now. This isn't the plan for when all that growth happens later down the road sometime. Because if you did that, you'd overspend. Because that's happened before. There's grass, and houses coming up. We need to build something, and they're not full. And so we'll make sure we don't get there.
You know, some of the programs that we wanted to implement on some of those land, I think we already have that capacity within our own buildings. And what we need to do is put up everything up on the market and see what we get. It might be staggered or something, mm-hmm. but we need to look at that, and we could say, you know what, hey, we're getting 20% return, we're getting 50% return, you know.
It's quite a bit of land. I mean,
yeah,
a lot of it
when you look at what the public said in the meetings mm-hmm. online and everything, they say no.
Well, I would say that is, first of all, you have to understand that 44% of the people who answered the question, of many of whom are employees. Okay,
it's
slanted. And secondly, and then you know, about a quarter of those were saying sell it. So, when we look at community responses, it's information. It's not a dictator, right? Because you know, otherwise, I'd just be we just be puppets up here doing what whoever showed up said to do. So it's information to take into consideration. But when we look at, you know, all the needs, I mean, you have people out there, you saw very strong sentiments to say sell it as well. You had very, you know, some people said, hey, I want to build the thing that I want, build the thing that, you know, athletics, build the fine arts. You know, we have to look at everything and look at the total budget and the total needs and say, what do we need to do? What's the near-term realities? What are our assets? You have a lot of land. A lot of land that's just sitting there. And you have a lot of needs. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, to me, I have to make a recommendation as what, you know, facilitate, you know, your budget and your facilities. And
can we get
we're going to get into that. So what do we need? We need to improve utilization. We need to consider the high school programs. We need to prioritize the capital needs and support a balanced budget. So this is going to be a little hard to read, but let me walk you through this.
Sorry, excuse me.
I'm not sure if you can. Cool. Yeah, there's a.
We need you back.
Mm-hmm. It should be this little
guy. All right.
By the way.
That's good enough.
Okay.
Thanks.
You're
welcome. All right. I did some numbers, working with your numbers here. This is your 2019 projections by grade level, by grade. Early education, pre-K, kindergarten, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Here is your current elementary utilization district-wide is 61%. Your current middle school utilization is 55%, and your current high school utilization is 108%. Okay? What if you took in 5 years? I'm sorry, not 5 years, not current, your 5 years, okay? What if you made a K-6 configuration, right? If you did that, your elementary utilization jumps to 70%, but your middle school drops to 37%. You're not going to do an ED7. Nobody does that, early ed 7. But if you did K through 8, you wouldn't need your middle schools at all. You have that much space in your elementary schools that you don't even need
but
your middle
schools. That's operating at 90%.
That's operating at 90% of 95%.
Yeah. Then we'd have to provide for middle school.
I'm not suggesting as an option.
Okay.
I'm not.
Beat them up.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting as an option.
You're just messing with the numbers now.
Right now, I was just doing a test case, right? Okay, what are these different options? Then, okay, well, what if we did something that's more practical? What if we did an early ed to 6 and a 7-9 configuration? If you did that, you'd be at 70% at your elementary, 62% at your middles, 78% at your high schools. You would drop down in your high schools, you take the ninth graders out, and you're at about 80% utilization at your high school, okay? Now, you could also say, well, what if we had one ninth grade center and then one middle school, okay? If you kept your middle school at a 6-8 configuration, it would be overfilled, and that'd be a mega middle school. We're not recommending that as an option. You don't want 1,229 middle school kids in one building for a district of your size. That's too big. What we do have an option, I'm going to look into, or I'm going to show you next year, is a 7-8. And then, you know, we have, you know, this theoretical, what if you had 6th through 9th graders? That balances everything out nice and easy, but it makes a weird configuration, probably not going to do it. So with that as a starting base for our discussion, we then pivoted to, okay, now what can we start doing? So the first option, create a 9th grade center at AMS, and make CMS and raise K-8 schools. Okay? Now, when we tossed through this option, we looked at it, I think this one's going to go, and here's why. Not because it's theoretically not viable, because when you start to do the numbers, you end up getting, 80% of the kids are 6-8?
You just make these weird K-8s where they're 6-8 heavy.
Yeah, they're very little elementary kids, and that's the reason we space these out so we can test them. I think this option is going to get canned, because I don't like having, you know, one class of first grade, one class of second grade, and all these middles. That's not a K-8. That doesn't make sense. Now, if you have questions about K-8s, I'd be happy to talk about it. I've done some research on it. There's a lot of support for it. There's different voices, of course. But they are what happened. K-8s are being used by a lot of urbans who have overbuilt, and their population has shrunk, and they're going back to a K-8. Historically, we had K-8s in the turn of the century, K-8s, 9-12s, and then we started to grow, so we had junior highs, we had 7-9s, and then 70s, and then in the 80s, we had 6-8s, and it was all population-driven. Okay.
There's no cost associated with option A.
Just something.
So the cost estimates, when we do this, we're going to work through that here over the coming weeks when we get to the community dialogue. We were just coming up with what could make the pieces work.
I understand. Okay.
Now, in this, we would convert, potentially, when you put a ninth grade center, one of the ideas is when you make that, you put the student support services with them, because that's where you want to make sure you keep those kids, you don't lose them. So you house that office with the kids where you have plenty of space. So that's an idea. In these options, you have way too much capacity, as I said, at the Altarete Middle School feeder. In all the options right now, it proposes taking Childress and making it your temporary admin, selling this plot, getting rid of this building, out of this thing. Boundary changes to balance enrollment, and this is the converting the Lone Star into the park that could be used as an option. Now, options change, okay? But this is what we're looking at, how to balance your budget. Everybody like every single one of these things? Probably not, right? But it's conforming your population to your actuals, your projected, and your budget, and your capacities. Now, the next option creates a ninth grade center at AMS, changes to a K-6-7-8 configuration, and makes CMS the 7-8 junior high. When you do this, again, you put some support services here, and then all of these apply.
What is the capacity at CMS then? Would you have all 7th and 8th graders?
Correct. So I'm going to show you utilizations in the last slide. We've done that calculation. CMS has like 1082, I want to say.
That's the full capacity.
The full capacity.
7-8, right?
That's right now. No.
That's its current capacity. Your 7-8 total enrollment is like 800.
Okay, so it'd be about 80%.
Yeah. Okay. And so the Bravo program, you'll see here, we're recommending in vacating the Lone Star building, putting Bravo into CMS, and moving the DAP program to a location to be determined where it's going to make sense, because you've got plenty of room for it.
We don't have to have Bravo. They're not even ours. They can move away to somewhere in El Paso. Not us.
Fine. You can do whatever you want, but we're saying moving it out. CMS is a near location with
Mars. I mean, they're not ours.
I think the discussions when we had that was we didn't want to just say to that organization, you're out of here, but to, and not necessarily just Bravo, but community engagement type programs as a general. So we didn't want, for these options, we didn't want to just say they're out, but just take Bravo as any kind of community type center that we have currently that's really, I feel, serving the district
very
well. Because
our job is, if something has a home and we're moving its home, where's its new home?
So Bravo would be any Bravo or the others that were here.
I mean, if you're looking at a budgetary thing, they're drawn down on our budget. We're paying their utilities.
It's true.
And their custodial.
True.
And
they're gone. You're talking about the
Project Bravo.
No,
you're talking about
the Workforce Commission.
Workforce Commission. You're talking about Workforce
Commission, right?
We don't pay Bravo's utilities.
We do pay for Bravo's
utilities and their custodial.
Project Bravo is still there. The Workforce Solution is gone. Yeah. They are gone. Bravo's still there.
But we pay people's bills.
Yeah, the lights are on, and we're not supposed to be cleaning their spot, but of course the custodians go over there and clean the spot anyway.
Restrooms,
all that good stuff. Yeah.
Option C converts both middle schools to a 7-9. And so you have a 6-8, 7-9, okay? And again, you have these constants here, all right? So all your ES becomes K-6s.
So in every single one of these, you're suggesting 8 through 6.
So the first three options all involve, you know, you're taking the 9th graders out, okay?
9th graders out and 6th graders back.
Yeah, right. The next two options don't do that. So option D right now converts CMS to a K-8. Again, repurposing Children's for Office, all these, and balances everything else with enrollment, with boundaries and so forth.
Pre-K is included?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to mention was pre-K. I know like some of the other districts are looking at pre-K, expanding the program and offering it to all.
Right.
So that way the parents, because parents are very interested in pre-K.
Sure they are.
And when that happens, then they grow within the school.
Yeah, and right. And I think the thing with pre-K is, of course, the funding implications of that. How is it being paid for?
Isn't there grant funding now under the past legislative session in regards to?
No, grant funding is funding from the government.
Yeah. But it's very minimal, it's not.
Yeah. So, I mean, that would be, you know, you have to look at the finances of that, if that would be something that you could stomach. Again, you would still have, when we do a master plan like this, I don't recommend ever putting options in there that bring you right to the teetering edge of your capacities. No. You need some wiggle room. This still, because you have so much extra space, there's still plenty of wiggle room. The last option we considered is the same as the prior, except it also converts Jose Damian into the high school skill tech center. Because you already have an agricultural program there in that space that's being utilized, and because of its relative proximity to the school, then Damian can be where the career tech and the skill tech places have a home.
Do you count any transportation charges here?
So, yeah, I mean, that's always the question, is transportation.
We're busing kids, as it sounds like. If we're going to create a 7th and 8th grade center, that's every 7th and 8th grader in the district to one area.
It is. But it's also not, you know, it's also bringing a lot of kids closer to their home school.
Yeah,
by
the
case. So there's,
I mean,
there's
some that's going to balance out, but okay.
Yeah.
I just didn't know if you were including your transportation.
Sure, we have to consider those things, and that's where, you know, we kind of look at, you know, viable driving distances and routes and those kinds of things. Yeah. When you look at a skilled tech center at the high school like this, how it would work what I would propose that you consider is that it becomes like a block scheduling, where you would go there for half a day, and so you would have, you know, a bus taking the kids to and back. It's a twice a day thing. It's a regular route. And that way it really, you know, pulls some kids out. We had estimated probably about 10% of your high school kids come out. So, and then the option to sell land. Of the 135 dormant acres of land that you have right now?
135. But they're not dormant.
They're not being used.
You've got 40 acres that are farmed.
I didn't include that.
Producing an income for our FFA students.
We didn't include active land. We only that does not include, this is not active land. This is land that's currently not being used for anything. Of the 135, more or less, we're recommending that you sell about 90 or attempt to sell or test it.
So you haven't included the agricultural land next to Jose Damian or the agricultural land next to Garcia?
No, that would not be sold. And I can tell you what.
Can't we sell that and then maybe get a lease? So they actually build on it?
You could do that on top of this, sure. You know, that could be included later on. Again, this is the first crack at all of the options here. We have time to play.
I would say you have 90 acres unused. You should put the acres that we have used that it's not.
That there's no facilities on it. I mean, yes, we're using it for agriculture, but the interest in agriculture is not as high as it used to be.
Right. So, yeah, and again, this is not used land. This is like
unused.
The 50 acres of Childress or 60 acres, whatever it is, that's sitting
Childress
there. This is the little
it's
carve out on.
Almost all Childress and Garcia.
There
are a couple of little other slivers. This piece here.
Little thing on
Art Craft here.
So you are including the Garcia land. You just said you're using Garcia land.
Not this over here. Some
There's
of
multiple plots.
Yeah, you guys have actually four parcels here. One school actually sits on. And the two southern pieces are the only ones that I counted in here.
Two southern pieces are supposed to be for agriculture use.
Okay.
But they haven't been used yet. That's the thing.
How many acres do we have here?
At central office?
I don't know about that.
This site, it's
a
central office right now.
Internet connection, that'll slow us down here a little bit.
So, do you have cricket?
You're lucky you have your kind of.
You're saying this?
Yes.
The actual
Why can't we keep the central office and do a high school skill tech center?
You could, but you wouldn't be utilizing your existing capacity because you would be, you know, basically putting in a program here while maintaining excess capacity elsewhere, which you could do. You could. But the other option, you still have excess capacity, at least for the next 5 years, probably longer, in that area, and so it's utilizing that space.
So 3.9012 acres.
And how many acres of that is the ponding?
The ponding? What are you saying?
Less than a third, I'd say, just visually looking at it. Less, about a third.
It's inside.
About a third.
It's inside the.
I mean, I can bet here.
That's all right.
No, I can literally.
From this
is
can
ponding.
Can we build it?
I can.
A two-story parking garage in there?
Isn't that required by the city?
I don't know.
It happened like a couple of years later. It wasn't originally like that.
I think after the storm.
Are we capable of building a?
On top of a Yes, it's. I've seen it been done where you have retention tanks underneath a parking structure. I've seen that been done before. Yeah.
Is it financially feasible, Dominic? I mean, is it?
Yeah, it's building a parking structure. You're going vertically, so anything vertically is more expensive than going out flat. And
uh-huh.
So it would be more caustic, more expensive to do up than out.
Then can we just park in it if we wanted
no,
to?
No, not parking in it because it's in case of a flood. No, the alarms will go off in here, the special alarm for the flood, no.
Okay.
So here's the idea with the admin. When we look at it, we look at the feedback, we walk, you know, we kind of look at your building. in your 10-year horizon, 15-year horizon, it'd be really nice to have an admin center that's built to be an admin center.
But if we're not getting any more kids, why do we...
I'm saying 10 years, 15 years. I'm not saying 5.
Okay.
So what I'm thinking is, right now, that location, if you had money bags fall from the sky, right, and you built a new admin center, you probably wouldn't maintain this thing, A. You probably want to build a new one, B, and it probably wouldn't be right here, C. Right? And so with all those things in mind, the idea was, okay, growth is coming, let's move this in temporarily to where we have capacity, save some dollars, try to unload this, gain some dollars, buy time when the growth comes, and when it comes, we'll have the revenue, we can afford to build a new location that's built for our admin, built for professional development, built as a multi-purpose center, but that's a not yet kind of thing.
Because we won't pass a bond issue if you want to do that.
No, you won't. No. You won't now. You won't now. Absolutely not.
I think we can pass a bond now.
It's going to be, you're pinched. Right?
Say likely, yeah.
So now, I mean, if the idea is, again, what do we do for the next 4 years to prepare us to do what we want to do in 10 years, but we can't afford to do it now, but we think we can in 10 plus years as that growth matures, right? So you know it's not selling 100% of the land. We're not saying fire sale, we're having a yard sale, we're selling all of our yards, right? That's not the idea. It's unloading the things that aren't being used that could potentially generate revenue while still banking some things that we hold on to. Trying to strike a balance there. So your current configurations, your high schools, you're at 108%, middle schools, you're at 55%, elementary, 61%. Here's how the options pan out. Option A. When we do that option I think we're going to toss out because it creates a lopsided K-8. Your middle school utilization is at 100%. Okay? It lopsides it. So we don't like that so much. It does increase your elementary utilization to 78%, and it reduces your high school, which is nice, but that's troubling, okay, among other things. So we're probably going to scrap that one. Now, option B, creates a ninth grade center in AMS, changes to a K-6, 7-8 configuration, makes CMS the 7-8 junior high. Okay, what does this do? It relieves the high school, it improves elementary utilization. You could also house student support services with your 7th through 8th graders. Okay, or your 9th graders, you could split it up. It makes your middle school utilization 77% and your elementary 89%.
I like that one.
Okay? Then you look at, let's convert both middle schools to a 7-9. What if we did that? Your high school utilization, the same thing. Your middle school utilization, a little bit less. Your elementary schools staying around the same.
You're not addressing Northwest Early College High School with any of these options?
Your Northwest Early College High School enrollment and capacity is built into that 78%.
But you're not taking away from the fact that as a campus, a standalone campus,
right,
it will be over capacity.
It will be, correct. Your capacity is capped at 400.
It is a capped program.
And it's going to be, it's projected to be close to that in 2020. You're going to be about 125% capacity in trailers. Now, this one is a different animal, right? Your early college high school is a different animal. Because you, correct me if I'm wrong, but you own the portables, but you don't own the land, correct? You are in a rock and a hard place, right? You have all the financial responsibilities for a portable, which aren't cheap, but you can't do anything permanent about it because you don't own the land.
Mm-hmm. Well, we just did.
Yeah. You could, yeah, right. You could theoretically, this would cause some walking, you'd have a little bit of longer walk, but if you take ninth grade out, you have some space in there, you can move the program back to its home base, in the home school. However, that causes some complications with the program and how it operates. This is one that needed further discussion, okay, to be frank. And you could add in money to put another portable in there. You could do it. The program could use it. It's a matter of funding priorities. And if you do that, what else aren't you going to do? And does that weighing make sense? And that's, we need more discussion about that. Go for it.
I think if we start gearing up for like 2 to 4 years for a bond election, we look at selling some of the properties, and maybe if we were to maybe diminish all of, well, not all of, whatever we can in Lone Star, and then start building like a two-story type of administration building, and then try to create access from where like the beef jerky.
Don't
place
start with administration because people will.
Oh, they're never.
No, but once we sell that, and then we're able to.
No,
we're gonna have to make some tough decisions, and it, the problem is administration. When you put it in a bond program, that's where it becomes political. But if we're able to do that within the years before that's done, and then they see the transition and what we start building up, we're going to have to move whatever, probably KQ6 and whatever the board and administration feels comfortable, but we're going to have to focus on programs so that way we could build up, and then by that time when the population starts growing, then we'll be able to pass a bond program. And then we set up our district in the right direction.
You're more or less thinking exactly where I was thinking, is, you know, that kind of that stepwise logic there. And I think with the admin, our idea with Childress is that you are able to move in there, make some but minor renovations for an office space. It's not going to be all that much different, you know, than, you know, kind of the hodgepodge you got here. And then in your next bonding cycle, when you're hopefully your growth exceeds your decline and you have that, then you could look at to do that. Another option is that you could consider in the final recommendation, were you to go to a bond issuance that the bond is in packages as well, where you have your necessities at a certain amount, 10, 15 million, whatever it ends up being, core things, roofs, HVAC, boilers. And then your niceties contingent upon revenue generating from land sale.
You know,
it's an option.
I was thinking that if people see that staff has already moved into the new central office, mm-hmm. which might be Shielders, they're going to say, no, why do they need another central office?
Well, the idea is then you offload this and you use this as revenue. We're going to make this, we're going to sell it. Right? You got commercial development around here. This has a viable option for selling because of all the activity. You say, what we're moving into there so we can get rid of this so we can actually be more efficient.
Oh, no, I understand.
Yeah. And so it's all part of the, you know, Shane's job. So anyway, here's the thing. Okay, we've got this. Option D, convert CMS to a K-8. Here's the idea. You could convert, in this K-8 scenario, you can make this a magnet. You need to attract more kids over here. They're not coming in droves. In fact, there's a decline in that feeder, right? You could create a magnet program. It could be a dual language. It could be a fine arts. You have people saying they want more fine arts in your elementary and middle schools. You can make a fine arts magnet. You can create a dual language fine arts magnet. You could create a STEM academy. You could create an early and middle IB academy. You could look at what makes sense to you in a way that's different, that could attract kids in, and pull them over to that side where you need more capacity and offer programming that you don't have. And the way that you do that is that you have to bring those, you're moving the children's kids in and you're creating a bigger scale so you can actually afford to do these things. And the last option is where the same thing, only you can also convert JDE to a skilled tech center. This last option best balances your utilization. It puts your middle, your high school somewhere between 95% and 99%. It takes your middle schools at 80 and your elementaries at 78. Now, one of the things to consider, among many things to consider, because we have to consider a lot, if you take ninth graders out of high school, that will affect your athletics and your fine arts programming. Okay? It solves one problem, it creates another, and it's a benefit and challenges. Okay? All the options, when we bring them to the community, which I anticipate there being three to four, to the community, will have option, will have benefits and challenges. And I've seeded that here, and then the steering committee is going to help fill that out.
What you need to tell the community is you're going to educate them and provide feedback to them. when they start seeing some of the options, and then they think that's their decisions, and let's say the word of vote.
We've
had these issues in the past.
Armando, everybody has the issues of people confusing options with decisions, and it's just some people are going to mistake it, and it's the price of being transparent. You know, because the alternative, of course, is that nothing comes out until we make a decision, and then people are crying foul. So it's just kind of, you know, comes with the territory. But yeah, I mean, I'll say that till I'm blue in the face. Options, options, options. Yeah. But essentially, we're looking at going from this scenario where you're, you know, a half to 60% utilized at your elementaries and you're overfilled at your high schools, and figuring out a way where we can balance this out. And do so in a way, consolidate Childress repurpose Childress into an admin, repurpose Jose Damian into a skilled tech. These are things with the idea being, again, you do those kind of options now, they make sense now because you don't have the growth, and you don't have the enrollment there, and you do have the utilization, but there's not recommendations to close and get rid of because you want to save it for when you do have the growth, but you don't want to operate until you do. Because if you do, you're going to be pumping a lot of money after empty space and few kids. And you could gain a lot of efficiencies if you make those transitions for the next 5-10 years. The alternative is that you find other ways to save on your budget because you're going to be having smaller schools with less kids, and that has all the operating expenses accordingly. So,
you know, I keep hearing a doomsday on our budget, and it's smart that's not true. It's not doomsday. It's, am I correct? I mean, we heard this last year, and we did just real fine. We had greater tax growth than we've ever had in this district. Am I correct?
We had, I think, 6.7%.
Which is unheard of for anybody, right?
Except you also have your free and reduced population diminishing, which is the budget shortfalls accordingly. When we look at this, what I cannot recommend is a plan that flirts and gambles with growth that may happen. I have to present, and my responsibility is I have to present you a plan that you have confidence can set you up and be fine for the next several years. Yes, you had tax-based growth, but when I have to look at your budgetary numbers showing that absent cuts in expenditures by 2021, expenditures overtake revenue the year after my plan is done. So with that in mind, well, looking at your utilization, we have to adjust. I can't ignore that. I can't hope that it's going to get better based on growth that I'm not seeing in my projections but may come in if the development happens really quick and lots of kids come in. At rates of producing kids 6 times what we see elsewhere, 2-3 kids per household, wow. Individual cases, sure. Writ large across your district that we can bank on, no. Doesn't happen that way. So I don't think this is a doomsday. It's, again, it's thinking about it in terms of this era of time and the next era of time.
It's opportunity.
You got to seize the day now. Make use of your spaces. Right size. Have a little margin, rather than banking on growth that may or may not occur. This is what you have high degree of confidence in for the next 4 years. Do your enrollment projections every year. It's a small expense, and it keeps you looking at, how are things changes. And when things really start to change, your plan changes. It should be a living document. But I have a high degree of confidence that plan and the enrollment is going to be accurate through 2019-20.
We want to do something so that we don't get to do it. That's my goal. I want to make sure that we don't get into those dire shoes.
But I think we all do.
I'm curious. So we could give you a, we could rerun the budget now, we could, what is that property tax rate?
I would think 5 would be conservative.
You know, when I work with districts and they do, and I'm not a CPA, I'm not a CFO, not my game, but I do work with a lot of districts around the country. Typically speaking, when people do tax rate projections for budget reasons, and when we see it especially for bond rates and impacts upon, you know, median household income, typically what happens is the last couple years is projected to be similar for the next couple years, and then fall.
Yes.
With the idea being, you never know what's around the corner. You plan for, you know, some consistency, but then you plan for a drop. And if it, you know, if for some reason, you know, 6% continues for 5 years, beautiful. Now you've got excess margin and capacity. But you plan for a little bit less. And so, you know, that 2% would be more like on par what I see. Even in Houston, which is growing like gangbusters, I see those kind of projections where it's, you know, give yourself a little bank there for later. So anyway, next steps. Reduce those 5 options down to 4 because one of them doesn't work after we tested it. I told you, the first one. Receive the steering committee feedback next week. And see, you know, are we sticking with 4? Are we going to go, or they recommend ousting another one and getting down to 3? Then taking those 3 or 4 options, plus the land question, plus questions about prioritizing of the $70 million, we're going to slice that up into different catchments based upon major systems, based upon deficiency priorities, get feedback from the community on those kinds of expenditures on the 25th, which the committee was going to help us edit these things next week.
I like option B.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're going to do is you're going to take 4 to the committee, to the steering committee?
Where, option A is going to go. Because it creates a lopsided KA that's not...
Go away.
Go away. Go away. Cut. Done. Delete.
For good.
Terminado. Yeah. Nada más. You know, no more. Options B, C, D, and E are going to go to the steering committee, and it'll be repackaged as A, B, C, D. You know,
as we talked about, option orange, option blue.
Yeah, we're going to come with
something.
A is not preferred. B is not second best. You know, it's just
like you mentioned.
Yeah, we can repackage that in a way. They're going to have the last 4 options, the current B, C, D, and E to review, because they all functionally work.
So we're moving central.
No. What happens at the office of E?
In all options, office moving to Childress. Okay.
How soon is this going to take place?
Next year.
So the implementation is always a question, right? And that's largely up to you. When we get to the recommendations work session in March, towards mid-March, we're going to take the community's feedback, we're going to take these 4 options or whatever they end up being, we're going to come to you again and say, okay, of all those 4 options, recommending this pathway. And it may be wholesale one of these, it may be a hybrid, okay? And then, you know, with cost estimates for what it would cost to do all these things, as well as, you know, sequence, ideas for sequence. The actual timing of all of that is really up to you all after this is done. It is designed to happen over you know, through 1920. It cannot all happen in the same year, right? If you do go up for a bond, we wouldn't recommend that you necessarily try to maybe do it all in 1 year. We'll see. But we were going to present you the sequence of things, what would have to happen before the next. You may choose things that are easy to do, boundary change. Relatively speaking, right? It's not a capital investment. You don't need a RFP for that. People don't like it sometimes, but you can do it.
Can I ask a broader question? It's a lot of information. It's a lot of stuff because we went through back in executive and dealt with a lot of stuff. And
now they're telling you to close schools and you should, option A, option B. And we may want to slow down and on 2/11 come back as a board and have another small workshop. Because what I don't want to do is all of a sudden the community says we did all this without you all leading with the vision of what we're trying to do. I think it should, I mean, it's 8:45 at night. You work the whole day with high school kids. You work, you know, you had coffee at IHOP. So it's okay to think, and I don't know your schedule there, but again, I don't want the community to go out and go on a path without the board leading and some kind of, not that we're going to tell the community what to think and how to think.
Sure.
But there should be, like that Lone Star building is like, it's kind of like
Can we say a sacred cow?
Yeah, yeah, sacred cow, like the tree burning.
Yeah.
So
right.
I want to give them options that are feasible with these seven, because these seven are elected officials, and I want to respect their seats.
Yeah, and I understand. I consider my job as well as to tell you things as I see them from an objective standpoint. I have no heartstrings for Lone Star because I don't live here. You do. And so you're hearing from a sort of an objective standpoint, okay? And so, you know, there's a dialogue that needs to go back and forth here. We have a board work session scheduled on the eve of recommendations, which I believe is March the 16th.
March 16th.
We have another work session like this, and what you're going to go over then is the Community Dialogue 2 results before we get into recommendations, which will be the following day. On the 11th, when I'm here for the steering committee meeting, we're meeting from 6 to 8.
6 to 8.
Right here, I could meet before then. Probably don't want to meet afterwards, but I could meet before then. Even if it's you know more informal than this, in just sort of a fireside chat.
Isn't there another community meeting on the 25th?
25th. Yes, that's community dialogue number 2. Yeah, and so the community will help us consider the options and edit the options, and with those edits, it'll go to the community on the 25th.
What if the board doesn't agree with the committee's recommendation?
So what happens is the committee makes suggestions for, you know, gives feedback on the options, they make suggestions for edits, those kinds of things. At the end of the day, Dionne Richter, who I work for, and Jacobs, which is the prime, we present you our recommendations. They are ours. They're not the committee's. They're not the community's. They are ours. The committee and the community have influenced them and helped shape them. But ultimately, we bear responsibility for providing you the report and the recommendations based on our experience and expertise. If, upon delivering our recommendations, you don't agree with parts of it or whatever, first of all, we want to work through a lot of that ahead of time. It is a living document. You can change. But here's the thing. And it's a bit cliche, and Alex is probably tired of me saying it. But when we provide you the recommendations, it is an entree, not a buffet. It is a package from start to finish. Everything fits together to solve the issues that we see. And so if you say, well, we really like this, but we don't want to move the Childress, we want to keep that the same, then it's not our master plan anymore. Because what happens is that takes the utilization and the savings that you could have there. We weren't going to budget things to do in that school that we would if it was a school. Now that it's an admin, you're saving money. You keep it as a school. There's no longer money budgeted in there because we didn't put it in there because it's not in the plan. And the dominoes start to crack. Okay? And so what we want to do is we want to work that out ahead of time. That said, we don't recommend that you simply say, we're going to adopt this wholesale, close our eyes to any changing situations, and just follow it lockstep. We typically look for it, we want to craft it so that it meets our responsibilities, what we believe as your consultant team, and as a living document that you can accept. And if something radically different would change, you can adopt it, but understand how the pieces fit together and try to keep that consistent, you know, strategy. What's the DNA of that plan? That's a bit long-winded, but did I answer your question?
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
At the end of the day, we got serious and tough decisions and have to really take the bull by the horn.
You do. You have seriously tough decisions. But to be frank, they aren't as bad as they could be.
Yeah.
A seriously tough decision is you are like your neighbors and you built for an era that's not coming back for a long time and you don't have to repurpose schools. You need to close 13. That's serious.
And pass a bond program.
That's serious. Because you have a 200-station elementary school that you can't fund, and you have all these kinds of things. You don't have that. You have, we need to shuffle for now so that we can prepare, you know, prepared for later. It's hard. It's not easy, but it's nothing like what it could be.
I'm thinking, J.D., and of course, yeah, we'll come back, but like J.D., we pretty much could have like a dean and have a hallway in regards to a program that could be started out early. Maybe the whatever the ISLETA has, where we started out like as a little hallway, and then once the ADA comes in, it turns into a full campus, and then we probably move to Childress.
Are you talking about like mothballing parts of the facility and just closing it off, and then as your population grows, opening it back up and restart it?
I think the JDE, instead of closing it down, creating maybe like that little magnet, a really cool program, the micro society or whatever you all researching is the best program.
Yeah,
and then it blows up into a campus.
And that could very easily fit within this option, right? You know, option D, you convert CMS to a K-8. Maybe you make that a magnet. Maybe you make JDE a seed magnet for something else. Sure, you knew it.
Just a hallway where later on, you just have one dean and five teachers.
You know, Spartan staff, and you just go for it. Sure. Yeah. You could look at those.
It's just something, and then children. I mean, we just got to think outside the box.
Right.
And not say no.
Yeah. Well,
Matt, if you're
Dominic,
including,
I'm all done, Dominic.
Would you mind?
No, go for it.
If I could, Dr. Galaviz and board, if you wouldn't mind me kind of concluding. With a little bit here as a committee chair, I'm really enthusiastic about hearing some discussions being had amongst yourselves, thinking outside the box in a group setting, all of us thinking together about the future plan. And it's really refreshing for me to see you all. I'm no longer with the district. I don't work for you. You don't pay me. I'm not here any longer. But it's really refreshing for me to see these types of discussions happening at Canalfield because we haven't had a unified vision for where our facilities, where our education is going to the level of this sophistication. We've hired an outside firm that is doing an excellent job, in my opinion, to provide us with the facts, to provide us with recommendations that are going to really ultimately guide us for the future growth. Because we're preparing for that growth. We know it's coming. It's not going to happen right now. We've got demographics that he's betting his life on right now, his word that they're going to be what they are. And we're planning to grow after the 5 years. And if we have, you know, whatever the plan is, it's something that we can all live with, that we'll be able to then go strong into that growth and build the school saying, we saved back in 2015, 16, 17, we're in 2021, we're going to build that school, right, let's go. We got the money for the land, we got the voters' approval because we've moved and we've sold this facility and they've seen that, they see we're reinventing ourselves and we're thinking outside the box, as Mondo had mentioned. We're opening up skill techs or STEM schools. We're having boundary changes that make our schools utilize and to maximum capacity so that we're being efficient. I've been harping for 2.5 years here that I've got facilities and grounds with grounds guys that are overworked and a budget that isn't being kept up with the amount of money that you need to maintain your facilities. We don't have that. We're barely keeping alive the facilities that we have. If we come up with a plan, whatever it is, it's better than not doing anything and continuing to be in the same predicament we've been in for the 2.5 years that I was here. And then also thinking about grade configurations. How do we best educate our students to be the most premier school district in all of El Paso and all of Texas and all of the nation? We have that opportunity to do that now. And regardless of what the plan is, I didn't come in here with a preconceived notion saying we're going to close Lone Star, we're going to close Bill Childers, we're going to move. We really didn't have anything. This is really just what has popped up. Because we've been thinking, just like we thought tonight, strategically about what we need to do to be best efficient, to be able to provide the best education, and meet the needs of the taxpayers who have voted and given us their feedback. So I just want to thank you all very much for your time, and let's continue the discussion. This is not us feeding you anything. It's all to be discussed, and I'm encouraged about the discussions to be had. So.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Anybody, Ms. Searles, I knew you had something you wanted to...
You could just tell by my face.
Yes.
I did, and I'm blank right now. There were two things I wanted to know. I'll remember them, and I'll call Dr. Gellowies tomorrow. It was something I wanted to know so that when we meet again, we'd know the answer. I guess maybe... a thought about what this building is worth. Not an appraisal, nothing special, just maybe Renee Mondo, you work for the real estate people. You know, just a guess. What do you think this is worth? And I'd like to know who the two owners of this property are. Below us. Are these two that are for sale?
20,000?
I think that's all.
Can I adjourn the meeting?
Yes.
Item number 3, adjournment. And the point is 19.
Thank you.
Thank you.
53,800.
53,000, Mrs. Searles. Square feet?
54,000.
54,000 times $100 a square foot.
You think that's all we can get for it?
$100 a square foot?
Half a million dollars?
That's just the
building itself. Your building is 53,800 square feet.